Well, I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Joanna Robertson.
Hello, how are you?
Really well, and it's a beautiful day in Fremantle.
We can probably hear the waves lapping outside. We're inside the main gallery, and it's really, the sound of the waves is quite audible, able to hear, and I'm sure you can hear it, pick it up.
I can, and if we'll go quiet in a minute so everyone can listen to the waves crashing on Bathers Beach, because that's where we are at the Cadogo Art House.
And for a change, we've had some wild weather in the last week, and the last 2 days, still calm. The water is like silk outside, beautiful puffy clouds. It's like this absolute beautiful day.
And have you been kayaking out here lately?
I've got my kayaks in the gallery, in that gallery. I haven't been out for the last few days because I've been running around.
Well, let's start with the running around, because lots been happening in the last few weeks as we sort of come into this strange, not out of COVID, but starting to get towards it. And then we'll go back to the beginnings of Cadogo and how you come to be here and
lovely
and all of that. But just lately, here at Cadogo, where all sorts of functions happen, out on a beautiful deck looking across the Indian Ocean, across Bathers Beach, out to the South Mole Lighthouse, across to J Shed, back to the fishing boat harbour, you've been running all sorts of evening functions during the storms.
Absolutely. Well, we've at the moment, I've just started a series of soirees being come to my house for dinner, my house being the gallery, at Cadogo Art House, and have a meal with music and good company.
Now, I'm looking around. It's a really, really attractive setting. And if anyone were thinking I was trying to promote the setting, well, I'm not. It's just a very beautiful setting. And you've been able to take a statutory 20 or something like that in
here. That's right. And it fits very comfortably. 20 people fit very comfortably in here.
And these events have been called Joanna's Soiree.
Yes. And then I announce the artist who will be performing. So I invite an artist to come and perform during the dinner period.
Well, I ran into some people the other day, you'll be pleased to hear, conversationally, unrehearsed, who'd been to the Irish.
Oh, good.
Night.
Oh, excellent.
And
so good.
That was on a Friday night, I think.
That's right, with Brian Dalton.
Yes. So you've got a number of artists who are in the main or entirely local artists from around Frio.
So around Fremantle, and last night we had Sarah McIver, the soprano opera singer, who is world-renowned. Australia, she's regarded as one
she's
of our
fantastic.
Great performers. And she performed here in this beautiful space for 20 guests. And we had Caroline Bagnall on the piano, who's phenomenal. And the two of them, just, I was moved to tears. One of the songs she sang, it was just so incredibly beautiful. And I think for all of us, it was a magic
yes.
night.
Well, I mean, it is the classic setting for a jazz club, I always think, and no reason why you can't have an opera singer in a jazz club either. And that, it is so intimate.
Well, my challenge was to make the room feel intimate. So this gallery is a reasonable sized space with a high pitched ceiling, timber, lovely old timber, huge big sort of timber beams. And for years I've been running a little thing called Kelp Bar, which is in a narrow space, which is normally my studio and office, and overlooking the ocean. It's a narrow tin shed really, with lots of plants and art, and everyone loves it, very eclectic. And what I wanted to do is, with the COVID situation, I didn't want people being too close to each other. And so my challenge was to make the large gallery space feel and have the feel of the Kelp Bar space, with lots of plants and furniture and nothing matching. And that's what we've achieved.
It all matches, Joanna.
Oh, it matches. It matches in that none of it matches.
In
that's how it matches.
In a Fremantle way. Now, again, entirely unrehearsed and coincidentally, I was talking to some people this morning who, when Cadogo came up, remember it in the days when the very well-known, quite famous local potter Joan Campbell worked out of here. And they have some of her work hanging on the wall in their home. Sent me a photograph. It was lovely. But so this place was here before you came along and made it what it is. What is the story before you got here, which is how many years ago?
I've had the building 21 years.
Yes.
Before me, Joan Campbell was here for 27 years.
Yes.
And she ran it as a pottery, a working pottery space and showroom where she sold her work. And there was a big shed attached to the building, bigger than the building, on the southern side of the building.
Was that a kiln or something, wasn't it?
That was where she would do a lot of the firing. And this room, which we call the large gallery now, she had shelves where people would come in. It was a showroom to buy. And then the back studio, which I use as my own studio now, that was where she had some of her potter's wheels and she would make work. Mm. So really it's been, this building has been protected by two women over the last 50 years.
Well, you're both formidable women and I'm sure people make sure they open the path for you to keep going straight through. But we'll come back to just what you have been doing here, but let's talk a little bit about you. Some people know you by reputation. You've got a presence here in the west end of Fremantle. I've already referred to your kayak, and probably there are people who, a little bit like the French lieutenant's woman, have spotted you or think they have coming in from somewhere.
Yeah, that's true.
So you arrive in Fremantle around what, 21 or so years ago?
Yes. I've had Cadoga 21
well,
years.
When did you first
come
here?
So I came here about 30 years ago.
Right.
And from America. I'm Irish. I was an Irish artist. I had done a 5-year degree in fine art at the National College of Art and Design in Dublin. I was exhibiting a lot in Ireland. I was quite well known in Ireland as an Irish artist. And I had the opportunity to go to North Carolina to be part of the North Carolina Visiting Artist Program, which was an artist in residence program.
There's a wonderful town in North Carolina called Asheville.
Asheville, exactly. And
so you go to North Carolina? You stay?
I stayed in North Carolina for a couple of years, and then after sort of being there for a couple of years, I'd always wanted to come to Australia. And so do you mind, can we just carry on?
Yeah.
Okay. And so went to North Carolina and was an artist in residence there for 2 years, where we were doing lots of exhibiting, got to exhibit at the Kennedy Center with a group of other visual artists, and continued working there, traveling there in North Carolina, exhibiting, meeting up, collaborating with other visual artists, performers, and then came here 30 years ago. As an artist, I got my residency as an artist, as my art form being an artist, which is an unusual thing.
Yeah. And having got here, what caused you to acquire Cadoga?
Well, I was running lots of art courses in hiring premises. So the Claremont School of Art, I used to hire in facilities at the different universities and TAFE, and I'd hire them at the weekends and during the holidays, and I ran lots of courses all across the state, the metropolitan area, in many locations. And I did that for years, and then somebody mentioned that this building was coming up for tender, and so I thought...
It belongs to the...
Well, Joan Campbell had just passed away, and so they put it up for tender, and I tendered for the premises, and they wanted it to be a pottery. Yeah. And I got the document, and I crossed off all the words, and I just went, it doesn't need to be a pottery, it can actually be a place where we can have lots of different things going on.
Yes. So when you succeeded and succeeded her here, what were your immediate plans?
My feeling was that it could be sort of a multi-arts centre rather than being a place where someone just makes something and sells something, that it could be a place where people gather, where we would have children's workshops, we would have... So I was thinking very much more about it being a place where people came to learn from me as an artist about painting or being a professional artist or drawing, and so ran lots of short courses for people, and then became an accredited training organisation to deliver accredited art courses, so people get like a Cert 3 and a Cert 4, And managed to get that through before the Central TAFE did. I was running ARC courses that were accredited for people who wanted to perhaps go on and do portfolio, you know, portfolios with us and go on to university and TAFE. So we ran that as a pathway for many years. And during that time, I really became interested in the idea of working with Aboriginal artists and helping them to become professional. I felt that the courses that were available to Aboriginal artists were just not good enough. And I felt that they weren't being expected to be as good as they could be. And
so that happened?
I ran for 5 years. I developed and wrote up a course which I got accredited, which was a one-year course for Aboriginal people to come to. And it was about how to become a professional artist. Mm. And it was to learn how to do watercolours properly, to learn about colour theory, to learn about all the things that you would learn pretty well at first year of uni. And I only hired the best artists. So Paul Green Armitage, who is an absolute expert on colour theory, ran the first year design at Curtin. His PhD was all in colour. He came and we just spent 6 weeks. And my field of interest, apart from many others, is colour and how colour works. Mm. And so we focused a lot on colour. And so we did colour, and then I would get Philippa Nikolinski came in and she did a botanic painting, and I had Bob Poolman come in and talk to them how to do a tax return if they wanted to ever do that. And beautiful drawing workshops.
No one wants to do a tax return.
But he was great, you know. And just all the things about being professional. And then with the artists after who were working, you know, who'd been studying with me, it got to the point where I said to some of them that I felt were really exciting, let's do some public artwork, and began to tender for public artwork and put a team together where it'd be myself and various other wonderful artists.
Art's an interesting thing, but in the context of which you're speaking, what did the public art comprise?
Well, the first one we tendered for was to do the artwork for the entrance, front entrance of Fiona Stanley Hospital, and we won that. So when you go into Fiona Stanley, the artwork that's printed on the glass and the big painting at the end, that was all produced here in this gallery.
Oh, fantastic. And
then we went on and we did the 7 artworks in the lawn at Port Coogee, the new Children's Hospital, the Aboriginal Art Centre. We've got a 26 metre long artwork at Fraser Suites. We've done public artwork at Fern Park and various children's playgrounds, lots of places.
As I say, public art really interests me. I just love what it is that people do out there. Is that something you grew into?
Yes, I think it was. There was some exciting dynamics happening between myself and the Aboriginal artists who were working here. And I just felt we could do something different. We could do something that was a fusion between European art and how we, you know, learn about colour theory and how colour works as European artists looking at the sort of impressionists, and then bring that to the way that the Aboriginal artists who were working with me were traditionally painting, and bring the two together. And so there's a particular now style of public art which is very much not just public art but painting within the Indigenous community in Western Australia, in Perth, that's very much from the Cadogo sort of style, which is using masses and masses of different colour combinations. Mm. So just giving people the confidence to paint in a way that's
It's a wonderful
amazing
initiative and outcome. In my experience, what you've described as the early days and what you were doing here at Cadogo and the art lessons and growing into the Aboriginal art world and so on, still happens in that these spaces, the one we're sitting in, the smaller one next door there, are still used as hanging spaces. There are exhibitions,
that's right.
there's painting, photography, jewellery, craft.
That's right.
All sorts of arts. And have you always got something happening?
There's always something happening pretty well. I mean, some weeks I won't have planned an exhibition because I'm thinking, oh, that week I just want to do blah, blah. And then the next thing is somebody comes along and says, can I have an exhibition during that week? And the next thing is, we're having a show. So the spaces both, I've got two gallery spaces, what we call the white gallery, which is a smaller gallery space, pitched,
high pitch roof. There's a wonderful hole in the wall over
and
there.
And the two are adjoining by a hole in the wall.
Lovely,
somebody's, it was Joan Campbell, actually bashed a hole in the wall.
Did
you
she?
Step through this irregular sort of lump of a hole between some lumps of rock. And in the white gallery, it's got a white floor, that's why we call it the white gallery. It's a beautiful, both are beautiful proportion spaces for shows. Mm. We not only have exhibitions, we do a lot of installation art, experimental art. This room has been hung with black fabric to have just one photograph in it. We've had projections, we've had film nights, we've had just about every single different type of thing you can think of. Very sensory exhibitions where there's no light but just smell and touch and feel. Artists from all over the world, we've had beautiful shows.
I'm not sure if I'm out of my installation period yet, but I certainly became transfixed by it, and the famous artist Christo has just passed away.
Well, I happen to have met Christo.
Oh, you didn't?
Yes.
Where
and I was
how?
Very sad. Okay, so I feel incredibly privileged and lucky. I went to college and did a 5-year degree in fine art in Dublin at the National College of Art and Design, which was the top art college in Ireland. And all the Irish artists who lectured there and the heads of department had the most incredible network of friends all over the world in the arts. And the Irish people travel, you know, the Irish artists travel, exhibit a lot, and chat to everyone they exhibit. So when I was a student, we had Sean Scully, for instance, from New York, one of the greatest painters in the world. He was my external assessor for my first degree and second degree. And so he would come, he would talk to me about my artwork, and then next year he came back and carried on the conversation. But during that time, one of, the head of department, who was mates of Christo, got Christo to come. And it was one of the most exciting lectures I've ever been to. So he came to my art college, he spoke to us, and he was talking at that time about, he'd wrapped the islands with the pink fabric, so he was explaining about, how to do a project where you, allow the light would filter through so there'd be no harm to the animals underneath, and how to sort of go through that whole process of being able to do it, because everyone doesn't want you to do those sort of things. At the time, he was working on the big barrel pyramids out of oil barrels with all their natural colors. And what was remarkable was he raised millions of dollars to do his projects himself. He didn't seek any funding. He would do incredible drawings of his concepts. He would sell them to galleries all over the world and museums, raise the money, and he did this big talk about not looking for funding, that he would raise the money himself.
Yeah.
Very dynamic, very amazing man. It was lovely to personally being able to talk to him.
Well, and I didn't expect to come and talk about Christo today, but for a man who sort of, if he could have, he would have wrapped something right around the planet. He sort of went a fair way to doing it. Imagine he could have come here and done some wonderful things.
Well, I just got to tell you a little anecdote. He also wanted to do a piece in Dublin, and it was in the Central Park in Dublin City. There's a park that we all gather in and have, picnics and stuff like that. And he had come up with an idea to lay fabric along all the paths and do this piece. And, people would come from all over the world and everything. And the lads in the county council arced up and said they wouldn't have any of that. And he wasn't permitted to. And that was one of our big shames.
Well, I'm sure my father, who is a traditional watercolour painter, would have said, that's not art.
No. They didn't allow him anyway. He didn't get the permit to do it.
But you've gone beyond what Joan was ever thinking, and really by the sound of it, what you were ever thinking. You've become something of an entrepreneur, doing other things here. You've got music. I mean, it's still art, but you've gone into this quite musical performance art. Mm. You've used the deck area you use in here. We started talking about a soiree and people coming along. How did that all happen?
I've always, ever since I was 17, been doing things that will be an idea. So when I was even a student in the College of Art in Dublin, I was hiring their venues at the age of 17, 18 to run my own workshops.
So you've always had that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, and I was, the room, I was hiring rooms above bars in Dublin to run workshops at the age of 18.
Wanting to make things happen is my
always
perception.
Always, and then just looking at, and then when I was here and I was lecturing at TAFE, I was thinking, gosh, there's it just seems there's always an opportunity. You look at it and sort of think, all these people want to go to art college and they don't know how to do it. I'm going to start portfolio courses, and I think I was the first one to do it. But what I do, Michael, quite often is I start something, I'll run it for about 5 years, and then everyone else will be doing it, and I'll have dropped it then because I'll be on to another idea.
Yes.
So I don't keep going for very long periods of time just doing the same thing.
Well, you're and a classic starter.
Yeah. So I go that way, and even like when we were doing, you know, the accredited courses, then I was interested to move into the Aboriginals. I was working with Aboriginal artists, stopped the other one, and then became very close with a lot of these Aboriginal artists, and then let's get the public art. And then after a while, I just went, I don't want to do this anymore. And it wasn't, I'm so immensely proud of the artwork we did, and I'll still tip away and do some, but just some projects go on for 4 years of, you know, no decisions being made by the people commissioning it. And it, after a while, you just go, I don't want to spend time doing this. I want to make the art, but not be involved in that part. Now, we've done the big sculpture show. That was all started here, the biggest exhibition of West Australian sculpture. That was started in conversations here. So there's lots of things that, but when, after a while, I wanted to go into music. Now, I'm a visual artist, I'm not a musician. My father had a beautiful singing voice, and he in fact got a scholarship to King's College in the UK as an Irish boy, went over and had his whole career, his schooling paid for because of his beautiful voice.
Oh, wonderful.
And so he had this love of music, which we didn't, none of the daughters, there are four girls in my generation, my family, and none of us, we all paint and draw and make things, but none of us could sing.
You didn't get the larynx.
No, but my daughter is good on the piano, and
she's being forced to, take it on.
Well, she's being begging me to take it on, so good, it's good. And I've just found her a beautiful Matt Ward, who's part of sings with Freeze Frame Opera, has just started to give her singing lessons in Hilton, so it's great.
So we've got various activities going on here. The musical side has been, I think, a wonderful and rich addition to what happens in Fremantle. There's a naturalness to it. It's not for the 20-something hip kids, although it also attracts some of them. But it seems to be for a range of generations, and you seem to have artists who appeal to a range of people.
I think I'm not an expert on music, so I seek the advice of others, and I'm very fortunate to be an old friend of Lucky Ocean's, who's lives in Fremantle from Philadelphia, and Lucky has invited many, many, many musicians to perform here, and through him inviting musicians that I've never heard of before to perform here, they've come in, and this room is magnificent. The acoustics are magnificent in here. It's a simple stone barn with a timber roof, and people who sing here always go, this is amazing. They really enjoy it. So word has got out in Perth that this is a place to perform at. But what's interesting now is that has spread to the East Coast. So musicians who are touring, their agents are now really, you know, high profile agents in Sydney are asking for their musicians to perform here. Now we're talking classical and also, you know, well-known singer-songwriters. And also what I'm thrilled about, coming from Ireland, is that a lot of word has travelled around Ireland between well-known musicians from Ireland to their promoters to contact me to book them in to do a gig here, even though they're only going to have 100 people or maybe in the future 50 or whatever it is. They can come and perform here in an intimate setting with beautiful acoustics. They can do the whole concert acoustically. We've got a lovely piano. That is rare. 90% of venues have a bar clacking away in the background. And what we've done is we've made the service area, if you're going out for a drink or you want to go and have a chat, you can go outside and have a chat
quite
on the
separate,
deck.
Quite separate.
And in here, it's a listening room.
It's really magnificent and intimate. And I'm sure we're going to see the albums come out live at Cadoga.
We've been making lots of recordings. I just haven't had time to edit it, so I'm waiting for people to come and help me edit.
Well, I hope you don't have a five-year termination plan on your musical ambitions, and I hope this endures and prospers forever. It's the musical side of what happens here adds a richness to nightlife, and then the gallery things, mainly during the day, just have their own separate lives as well. Do you have other ambitions for the place or for yourself? You can share with us?
Well, I think at the moment, I can't really say too much about that, simply because the reality is I have just started doing these soirees last week, but woke up today thinking, I know that every day is a blessing that we can do it, because tomorrow I could be told we can't do it because we have to go back to only having two people. Or do you know what I mean? So in the world we're living in, I think it's a massive challenge as a business owner and an entrepreneur, is how do we, and I think this is for every business in Australia and the world, how do we as business owners put money and invest into our business? How do we make the decision to borrow money to do any infrastructure work, because we don't know if in 2 weeks' time or 10 weeks' time we will not be able to gather? So that's going to be very, very difficult for any businesses to grow or continue or to remain viable. So there's a lot of that.
There's another side to all of that, of course, and I think they teach this at business school, that with every crisis, every challenge, as the people like sometimes to term a crisis, there's an opportunity.
That's right.
And we continue to live as humans. And it seems to me, just talking about COVID for a moment, that we have already learned to live more simply. Mm-hmm. And we're adapting to changed circumstances. You can't have 30 or 40 people in here, but you can have 20, and it has a certain magical quality, which probably, I'm sure it does, affects bottom lines when it comes to revenue and all of these things. But can you see ways forward?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's been a really interesting period, Michael, the last couple of months, because I couldn't see what we could do. I couldn't see. My whole business model had been based on people gathering.
Yes.
And I was then told no one can gather.
Let's just focus on that so people understand what we're talking about. The kelp bar, say, during the lovely months of March and into April with the deck, you couldn't buy a beer, a glass of wine, and stand out there shoulder to shoulder and watch the waves lapping in. You just couldn't do it.
Well, we ran the sculpture show, Tony Jones and the amazing people of the Sculpture Bathers Committee. We ran the sculpture show. The last closing party day was the 2nd of March, and I had a liquor license for lots of people. We had this huge party. It was wonderful. We'd had, I'd say, about 70,000 people come through the exhibition.
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful. It ended on the 2nd of May, sorry, not 2nd of March, 2nd of March, the same day as the Highway to Hell from Fremantle with 100,000 gathered. Pretty well the next day, people were beginning to get sick.
The writing was on the wall.
The writing was on the wall around the world. People were getting... 2 weeks later was St. Patrick's Day. We had permission to, you know, have a license for, you know, hundreds of people to come. 15 came.
Yes.
There was no...
People backed out of everything, didn't they?
Because I didn't feel it was safe.
Yes.
They didn't feel it was safe. I didn't want more than that in the whole area, instead of having hundreds, because we didn't really know how to... And the next day we were shut, do you know?
So your business, and so many others, particularly around Fremantle, which is hospitality, all these venues, restaurants, bars, festivals, everything just stops. And on the shipping news, one of the photos that I put up on the first day of official restrictions in March was the Cappuccino Strip, like it was a ghost town. And there's been very few other photographs put up which got the response that got. It was just so sad and dispiriting and amazing. But coming back to here, you are now responding and starting to come out of this period.
Yes.
So it will depend on the regulation, obviously.
I think one of the things that a lot of us would have all gone through is, in everywhere across the world, is you're getting bombarded with all this news that you're all going to die. Then you have to, and your family are, you know, or that everyone's going to get sick at some point. Then you've come through a stage where people are beginning, it's beginning to get contained. We're suddenly realizing that people aren't dying, that the shutdown of the borders,
not
I think, has been fantastic.
Australia anyway.
Yes. And then it's only really when they began to ease restrictions that my brain began to work again and go, okay, what can we do?
Yes.
And what I felt we could do safely was what I love is the gathering of a few people in an intimate setting with lots of room around everybody and have music.
Well, I can personally see that that's got a lot going for it. Can I raise another event that
yes.
you're involved in, which
yes.
was that business model, but
yes.
lots and lots and lots of people. You had the Fenians
That's right.
Freedom Festival
yes.
a
yes.
few
yes.
years ago, marking the arrival of the last convict ship in Australia,
yes.
the Hougoumont,
yes.
which arrived in the January of 18. Amazing,
yes.
isn't it?
Yes.
2018. And there were artists from Ireland, there were descendants of Fenians, the council, the politicians, the president
remarkable.
Of Ireland.
Yes.
Everything happened. Just an have you ever organised anything like that before?
I don't know. I haven't. Everyone is different, very different. I
yes.
mean, it was very different to
it
what we've done.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. And it again, it's a bit like the Suarez. It came from me actually standing at the window and looking out at the ocean. I mean, told a story. And then I thought, here's an idea. This is, we must, I said, I'm an Irish woman. This is my beach. This is my place that I'm, you know, I spend my every day. And these Irishmen arrived here and no one has ever told me about them. I never knew about them. And there were 62 Fenians on that ship.
There's a lot of West Australians who have been born and bred here, particularly if they didn't have any Irish stock at all, who weren't aware, were not brought up with that story. And the consequences of the whole thing, J.B. O'Reilly and
That's right.
all these mates.
Well, even on the East Coast, then they don't know the story. And I think the story is better known in Boston than in Fremantle.
Yes.
Or Sydney or Melbourne. And talking to authors who've written very, very well-known books about the First Fleet, they said, no one knows about the Last Fleet. So and that particular ship was the last ship to come. It ended the idea of convict labour for building the
yes.
Australia. So it's a story that still needs a lot more telling.
It's a huge story, and it's just as well that some good people run a hotel called the Hougoumont in
yes.
the centre of Fremantle, because
yes.
people say, what's in that name? And
yes.
they're able to be told.
And the people who were all involved at the Fremantle prison archiving and, you know, carrying on the history, and they've been remarkable as well to help bring the story. And one of the things I'm incredibly proud of was Margot O'Byrne and Felicity Dillon, who are friends, who we worked together on the story, to bring the story alive of the Fenian Festival here in Fremantle in 2018. Margot was visiting the Mitchell Library and she saw the original Wild Goose manuscript, which is a book that
newspaper
articles. And the original handwriting of the men, the Irishmen, the 62 Fenians, the original handwriting, and it's in the Mitchell Library, and we negotiated for that manuscript
yes.
to be on show for a year for free in the prison, and the president, you know, and everyone came to see it. Plus, the stamp that came out in January 2018, there were three Australian stamps issued, and one of them was a watercolour of the Fremantle prison with an extract of the Wild Goose on the stamp.
Wow.
150 years later.
Well, it's, you know, a number of feathers in your cap for making that happen. It was a wonderful time in Fremantle. Speaking of Fremantle, you've been here now for this 21 years past. What is it about Fremantle that both attracted you and has kept you here in all that time and living here and roundabout? What is it about
Fremantle? I think it's something that's very precious that must be preserved, is keeping it okay and supported to do things that are offbeat, to do things to make it easy for people to have events, to do unusual shops and boutiques, and to have music on the street and have buskers, and keep the arts rich and alive here. And I definitely think that people should invest more in the arts, in by understanding more about the value of the arts to the economy as well as to mental health. But I think Fremantle, they've got to keep what, I wasn't here during the America's Cup, but it was that element of sort of madness. And don't make everything perfect and everything match. Let other cities do that. That's what we've got to keep here. And be sympathetic to people who are unusual.
So are there things that you would like to do if you were the imaginary empress of Fremantle for a period, the president of the Republic of Fremantle? Would you pass certain laws? Would you do certain things to the city? Would you add or remove?
I would be slow to encourage people to develop the city in a way that was bland. I would encourage people who are developers to work more closely with artists, musicians, and people who bring magic. We're doing these soirees, everyone's saying, this is magical. That's what we do. That's my job, that's Kavisha's job, and Sarah McIver, and Lucky Oceans, and Dave Miller. That's our job, is to bring magic to someone's life and experience. So talk to us. Now, in Dublin, there was a development that happened in a place called Temple Bar. Temple Bar was inner city Dublin. At the time I lived in Dublin, all my friends had art studios in Temple Bar. It was where all the buses parked and all the fumes went into the studios, and it was grotty. And developers came in and they developed it. But what they did was before they were allowed to develop it, the government put a caveat on it that they had to retain a percentage of the development for artist studios. So the artists moved out, the developers did it up, and the artists moved back into X amount of their studios. The rest they could sell for very expensive real estate. What happened then was Temple Bar became one of the top visited tourist attractions in the world, because there was the madness of the artist element. There was music, there was busking, there was art being made. You're going into a bar and you'd have an artist just from their studio upstairs there in their grotty clothes with oil paint, having a pint beside someone who's a movie star, behind somebody else who's just done their shopping. And that type of thinking here is what will make this place completely go off. So just not making everything perfect, and developers should all have to work with artists.
Well, that's a really interesting further take on architecture and development, and we'll finish on that note, because it's a lovely note. I'm sure a lot of people will share that view. And for those who've been listening to this, both from the beginning and here at the end, you've come back to the soirees. They continue. How long will they be?
So I've put a 5-week program together. So all through the month of June, we've got 5 nights a week where you get a simple, beautiful, hearty meal served to you in the main gallery. Nothing is formal. It's all done with great joy and grace and lovingly prepared food. And then everyone has time to chat. They all have to sit at their tables, not wander around, chat, and then a musician who I admire will sing. And you can just buy tickets online at cadoga.com.au/events. You buy your ticket, you come along, and we've got 2 sittings a night. I might just make it into 1 sitting soon. We've been doing only 20 people. I've got 35 seats in the room. I might just allow 35 people, because you can still have 4 square meters, but I don't want any more than that. I just want it to be very small, and just for people to come out and just remember how good our lives are.
Joanna Robertson, on that note, which really is all about what happens here, thank you very much for talking to the Shipping News, and good luck with all of that.
Thank you, Michael.